Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
Capital One has a fresh take on banking. Now you can open a new savings account in about 5 minutes and earn five times the national average. Banking with Capital One means five times the savings toward your dream honeymoon, or five times the savings toward your family's ultimate vacation, even five times the savings toward just feeling good about saving. It's time to make your savings goals come true. This is Banking Reimagined. What's in your wallet? Capital One, N.A. member, FDIC.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Nick Miles, and in the early hours of Wednesday, the 22nd of January, these are our main stories. The US Senate has begun the opening session of the impeachment trial of President Trump, with Republicans and Democrats arguing over how it should proceed. State prosecutors in Brazil have charged a former mine chief executive of the company Vale with homicide over a dam collapse that killed hundreds of people last year. Also in this podcast, as new cases of the coronavirus appear outside China, we find out how Beijing is responding ahead of a crucial WHO meeting. And
the tunnel was every shade of blue. It started turquoise. And then I swam around a corner and it was royal blue. And then indigo. And then psychedelic blue. And then it turned violet.
Swimming in the freezing waters of the Antarctic to save the planet. We begin in Washington, where 3 months after impeachment investigations began, the trial of President Donald Trump is underway in the US Senate. The 100 men and women have to decide two things. Did Mr. Trump abuse his powers? And did he obstruct the subsequent inquiry by Congress? The debate so far hasn't been about guilt or innocence, but about the ground rules for the trial itself. Republicans largely want to keep it short. The Democrats are demanding the right to call new witnesses. Some have already said the trial's being rigged because there's no guarantee that evidence can be brought. Adam Schiff is the Democratic congressman leading the prosecution.
If you only get to see part of the evidence, if you only allow one side or the other a chance to present their full case, your verdict will be predetermined by the bias in the proceeding. If the defendant is not allowed to introduce evidence of his innocence, it's not a fair trial. So too for the prosecution. If the House cannot call witnesses or introduce documents and evidence, it's not a fair trial. It's not really a trial at all.
Well, the White House counsel for Mr. Trump, Pat Cipollone, said there was no case against the president.
Once you hear those initial presentations, the only conclusion will be that the president has done absolutely nothing wrong, and that these articles of impeachment do not begin to approach the standard required by the Constitution. And in fact, they themselves will establish nothing beyond those articles. You look at those articles alone and you will determine that there is absolutely no case.
Well, let's look in more detail at what happened on day one of the trial. Our correspondent in Washington is Anthony Zerka.
What has happened is that after Mitch McConnell, the Senate Republican majority leader, came up with his proposed outline for this trial that would involve 3 days and 24 hours of opening statements from the House impeachment managers and Donald Trump's defense team, followed by question and answer session from the senators who would offer questions to both sides in writing. There would be a vote on whether or not to have witnesses and to subpoena new information. Democrats had offered a counter proposal that would issue these subpoenas right now. They're offering a series of proposals to try to guarantee that new evidence could be brought in. The first of those votes has already failed, and it failed along straight party line votes, 53 Republicans voting to kill the amendment, 47 Democrats voting for it. So this was the first evidence that Republicans are sticking together, sticking to the plan that Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, has laid out, that there are no breaks in the ranks, at least at this point, Things are going to move according to Mitch McConnell's plans. And if there's going to be a battle over witnesses, over new documents, it's going to have to wait until next week when the opening arguments on both sides have been conducted.
In terms of public opinion, won't people in the United States want to have every stone unturned, all the witnesses to testify? And if they don't, they may not be satisfied.
That's the thing. There have been several polls that have come out in the past few days showing that an overwhelming majority of the American public, 67, high 60%, support having witnesses brought in, support having these subpoenas go out, that even a plurality or a slight majority support removing Donald Trump from the presidency via this Senate trial. So by and large, the public is on the side of the Democrats here. The thing is that the Republican base is sticking together. And in the states that a lot of these Republican senators come from, they still have a Republican majority that backs them on standing by the president. And unless that changes, they're not going to break ranks. So while the public may be in favor of what's going on and may be in favor of a robust trial, that doesn't seem to be changing the opinions of these Republican senators. And the only thing that could conceivably change them is if they look at the election in November, when some of them are up for re-election, or 2 or 4 years down the line, whether they decide that a vote to curtail the trial or to stand by the plan to have a limited trial is going to cost them politically, because this is a political process more even than it is a legal process.
That was Anthony Zerker in Washington. As we record this podcast, the World Health Organization's Emergency Committee is due to meet later today to assess the global risks of the Chinese coronavirus outbreak. The virus has infected at least 300 people, 6 of whom have died. Cases have been found in Thailand, South Korea, Japan, and now in the United States. Imogen Folkes reports from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The key questions the WHO experts will discuss today: how exactly is the new virus spreading between humans? How easily and how fast? How serious are the health implications? Some of those infected so far have suffered only mild respiratory illness. Others have become seriously ill. 6 have died. The answers to those questions will determine whether the WHO declares this outbreak an international public health emergency, and whether it will issue advice on travel or trade restrictions. The WHO has already warned that more cases can be expected, including outside China.
Imogen Folkes. Well, in China, this weekend marks the Lunar New Year, with millions travelling for celebrations around the country. And some airports have started screening passengers for signs of infection, as our China media analyst Kerry Allen told me.
A lot more precautions have come into place now, especially since President Xi Jinping has issued a statement telling people, medical workers, that he wants them to do as much as they can. So it's come from the absolute top level now that that people need to, in the medical profession, take extra precautions. There's also been a very serious statement from the Central Political and Legal Commissioner saying whoever deliberately delays reporting will forever be nailed to a pillar of historical shame. So he has now, suggested that, for example, some areas of China, they might have had suspected cases and not reported on them, which is probably why we've been seeing in the last 24 hours suddenly lots of suspected cases, not just in Wuhan, but in cities all over China.
And this goes back to the 2002-2003 SARS outbreak, when there was a degree of cover-up, I suppose.
Yes, absolutely. And SARS is one of the words that's been coming up a lot in relation to this. At the same time, China doesn't want people feeling afraid that this could be another SARS. So I've seen a lot of reports today in the media from official media saying that that suggestions that this is very similar to SARS is fake news. And they've had interviews with specialists, medical specialists, saying that that people shouldn't be concerned because SARS was a lot more serious than this is. So really playing down the suggestion that this is another SARS.
And the people in China, do you think they've got a lot of confidence in the authorities that they're being straight with them? Or is there a degree of scepticism?
There is absolutely a degree of scepticism. I mean, one of the things I've seen over the last week, while cases have been coming out in Wuhan, people know that it's Spring Festival and that people are travelling all across China. So there were questions coming out about How can I catch this? Because people don't know what it is. How come I'm not hearing about this in other areas? What do I do to protect myself? And they're not getting a lot of answers because a lot of people are away on holidays. All the officials are not working, so they don't have the answers to supply people with. And I mean, Chinese people do culturally remember SARS, and it's very common, for example, in schools and office buildings that people will often open windows if somebody's got a cold or even a cough. People wear masks. So they know to take these precautions to stop germs from spreading. But at the same time, they are seeing lots and lots of reports coming out that this is spreading outside of a major city, all over the country and even overseas. So they're very, very concerned about this.
That was Kerry Allen. The Duke and Duchess of Sussex have issued a legal warning after paparazzi photographs were published around the world. Prince Harry and his wife Meghan say photographers are now permanently camped outside their home in Canada. The couple believe they were spied on, as our media correspondent David Sillitoe explains.
The photos of the Duchess of Sussex walking near Woodland on Vancouver Island with her son Archie strapped to her have been seen around the world. In a strongly worded legal letter, Prince Harry and his wife Meghan say they did not consent to the pictures being taken. The photographer, they claim, was hiding in the bushes and spying on her. Others are said to have set up camp around their home, using long lenses to track their every movement. The couple are said to be extremely alarmed by what they believe is harassment. The situation, they say, has become untenable. There is, they feel, a serious safety concern, and the legal warning draws attention to the way the paparazzi are driving and pursuing the couple. The emotions behind the letter are plain, with their echo of the situation Prince Harry's mother Diana faced and the way she lost her life.
David Sillitoe. You're listening to the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. Still to come, activists in Iraq remain defiant despite attempts to quash their protests.
I received three kidnapped attempts and I ran away. And I received a threat, an envelope with a bullet, and they're saying to me, be a good boy.
We have a report from the streets of Baghdad. Almost exactly a year ago, the Brumadinho Dam in eastern Brazil collapsed, unleashing a huge wave of sludge and water that engulfed several communities. 270 people died. Now, prosecutors have filed charges, including intentional homicide, against senior employees at the mining company Vale. More from our Latin America's editor, Leonardo Rocha.
The main person named by prosecutors is the former head of Vale. Vale is the mining giant, one of the biggest mining companies in the world. His name is Fabio Schwarzman, who resigned just a few weeks after the accident. And there are 15 other people from both Vale and from a German company that was hired to provide an assessment to see if there was any risk. And, of course, they wrote a very detailed assessment, said there was no risk of collapse.
So that trial is going to be going on over the next weeks and months. But there's still a lot of concern, isn't there, in the state of Minas Gerais, where there are many other mines in states of disrepair.
Yeah, Minas Gerais means general mines. It's an iron ore area. There's hundreds of similar dams that are used to store waste from mining. They've done studies showing that there are many concerns. There were scares in some cities and towns nearby. And there was another accident 3 years before that one in Brumadinho. So there's a lot of concern in Brazil and specifically in Minas Gerais.
Leonardo Rocha there. While his impeachment trial was getting underway in Washington, President Trump was thousands of kilometres away in Davos in Switzerland, taking on what he called prophets of doom. They were not his Democratic opponents, but environmental campaigners. Speaking at the World Economic Forum there, the president announced that the US would help plant a trillion trees, and he insisted that a creative market economy would find solutions. In the audience, the Swedish activist Greta Thunberg. Our diplomatic correspondent James Robbins reports from Davos.
Donald Trump's tactic for distancing himself from the trial is literally to get away from it all, flying to the alpine heights and sparkling skies of Davos. Here he hopes to look more like a president on the world stage, less like a defendant back home. and in his conference speech, he took care not to mention impeachment at all.
Today I'm proud to declare that the United States is in the midst of an economic boom, the likes of which the world has never seen before. We've regained our stride, rediscovered our spirit, and reawakened the powerful machinery of American enterprise.
Even if every word of that were true, President Trump is completely out of step with the number one priority at this global economic forum. That is a call on all governments to do far more to slow a dangerous pace of temperature rise, not just to promise more. Donald Trump insists America, second largest polluter after China, is playing its part.
Because this is a time for tremendous hope and joy and optimism and action. But to embrace the possibilities of tomorrow, we must reject the perennial prophets of doom and their predictions of the apocalypse.
But one of the president's sternest critics is speaking here too. Greta Thunberg, the teenage Swedish activist, seemed to catch the mood of the meeting, blaming all governments, not just the United States, for inaction and empty promises since agreeing the breakthrough global Paris Agreement 4 years ago, which committed them to keep temperature rise since pre-industrial levels well below 2 degrees Celsius.
The fact that the USA is leaving the Paris Accord seemed to outrage and worry everyone. And it should. But the fact that we are all about to fail the commitments you signed up for in the Paris Agreement doesn't seem to bother the people in power even the least.
But the people in power are under intense pressure now. It's possible to sense a shift in mood here among heads of many of the world's largest corporations, including in the energy sector. At this gathering, Donald Trump is only one of more than 100 billionaires, and they seem to be at least as focused on global warming as they are on the president's travails.
James Robbins. Well, the World Economic Forum may only have started this week, but in the words of one Swiss newspaper, for some Russian tradesmen, the forum appeared to start some months ago, in the summer. According to the Tages-Anzeiger, it was then that Swiss police interrupted the beginnings of a Russian spying operation. Thomas Knellwolf is the reporter who uncovered the story.
Last year, in August, the police in the Swiss Alps controlled two men. They were Russians. And they said, at least one of them said he was a plumber, but they had diplomatic passports. And the place where that happened was in Davos, where now the world leaders are meeting at the World Economic Forum. The suspicion then was that they were spies.
And have the Swiss police said what it was that these two Russian chaps were up to, what they were doing at the time?
No, maybe they don't even know, because there were no criminal charges afterwards. They were just sent away.
Right. I guess the obvious question would be, why are you a plumber with a diplomatic passport? If they did ask the question, do we know what the answer was?
The Russian embassy said to me now that they were working at the Russian House, which is like an event venue during the World Economic Forum. But according to my information, there is not loads of plumber work to do in preparation half a year ago, because it's just a restaurant that they use.
Yeah. And Russians presumably do attend the World Economic Forum. I mean, it's not unusual to see Russian passports there.
Mm-hmm. There are many Russians, but Putin is not here this year. Trump is here. Merkel is here. The British minister is here. There are loads of interesting objects for spies.
Indeed, and I suppose it's not really any huge surprise that spies would go to a place like Davos for the World Economic Forum, because you've got lots of very powerful people there.
You have to remember that the hitman that tried to murder Sergei Skripal in England passed quite a lot of time in Switzerland before the attempt. So this could be like a preparation mission for something serious.
I guess for Davos, though, like any big event where you've got lots and lots of VIPs attending, the security around it must be a huge operation.
Yeah, it's heavy. This is a valley in the Swiss Alps, but it's easily to control because there is just one or two entrances from each side, and there is the airspace is controlled. It's forbidden to fly there, and it's easy to control the access.
That was Thomas Knellwolf talking to my colleague Tim Franks. In Iraq, three more protesters were killed on Monday as they cranked up their months-long campaign for a new government, new elections and an end to corruption and foreign interference. They're mostly young Iraqis, and over the last few days, our Middle East correspondent Quentin Somerville has been following them. This is his report from the streets of Baghdad.
This part of the Tigris was a forbidden space. Now it almost feels like a party. But the protesters say their ambitions are much greater. They want to create their Iraq. They're tired of corruption, of sectarianism, of unemployment. And they've already had some success, but it's come at a terrible cost. Detention, torture, and hundreds of deaths. But that, they say, won't stop them.
My name is Hamza Ali Mohammed, and I'm 17 years old.
Hamza has been on Sinak Bridge above the beach for 40 days. A few nights ago, two more protesters were killed here. You say that while you've been here, there have been kidnaps attempts and you've been intimidated. What kind of threats have you received?
I received three kidnaps attempts and I ran away. And I received a threat, an ambulo with a bullet, and they're saying to me, be a good boy.
They've had enough of being patronised. And enough of history. They never talk about Saddam Hussein or the Iran-Iraq war. And they've had it with their government's excuses. Iraq is a country with a personality disorder. It is Iran and it is America. Their influence and power affect politics, the economy and the military. I travelled to Al-Asad Air Base in Anbar province, the latest site where the proxy war between Iran and America has burst into view. Al-Asad Air Base is a great barometer of America's commitment to Iraq. During George Bush's time, it was one of the biggest in the region. During President Obama's, it was abandoned by the Americans. But yet again, the future of the Americans at Al-Asad Base is under question because Iraq is so outraged at the breach of its sovereignty by the Americans attacking and killing Qasem Soleimani, Iran's leading general, who was a guest of Iraq on their soil. They now want the Americans to leave. They now want the Americans to get out of Al-Assad and all their other bases here in Iraq. Back in Baghdad, the protesters want Iran and America to take their fight elsewhere. Damn them both, they chant. This morning, the protesters have closed off some of the highways not far from Tahrir Square. I'm just walking up on one of the ramps now onto the main highway. You can hear the tuk-tuks, which are the logistics, if you like, of this revolution. They're rushing up to block off another road. And the reason they're doing that is because they say that the government hasn't been listening to their demands and they're having to escalate their protests. Abdullah Najah is 25 years old. He too has been on the streets for months. With soaring unemployment, rampant cronyism, he has nowhere else to be.
Do you think the government's listening to you?
No. No, they are not listening.
So what do you do?
Ansa'ad.
We are going to peacefully escalate. We haven't shot or killed anyone. The best we can do is burn those tyres, and this is a peaceful escalation that all countries can approve of. The state, the parties and the militias are all against us.
Back on Tahrir Beach, the mood has mellowed. The Iraqi national anthem is playing, there's singing and chanting. The old Iraq lies just across the Tigris. The green zone, its blast walls, monuments, embassies and government buildings. The sounds carry across the water. And those inside have no choice but to listen.
Our Middle East correspondent, Quentin Somerville. Earlier in this podcast, we heard how the Swedish activist Greta Thunberg, speaking at the World Economic Forum in Davos, accused political and business leaders of making empty promises while the world burned. Now, the endurance swimmer Lewis Pugh has swum in a freezing narrow river under the Antarctic ice sheet, wearing nothing but a pair of swimming trunks. As we record this podcast, he's planning to embark on a major swim in Antarctica shortly to highlight the issue of climate change. He sent the BBC these thoughts.
I'm speaking to you from inside my tent deep in East Antarctica. This is one of the most remote places on the planet. It's vast, it's beautiful, but everywhere we look, we're seeing meltwater. I'm training to swim across a large supraglacial lake. So this is a lake on top of the Antarctic ice sheet to demonstrate the very rapid changes which are taking place here and to call for the urgent establishment of a network of marine protected areas around the continent. I did a training swim down a tunnel under the Antarctic ice sheet. It's the most beautiful place I've seen in the whole world in my whole life. The tunnel was every shade of blue. It started turquoise. And then I swam around a corner and it was royal blue, and then indigo, and then psychedelic blue, and then it turned violet. There were the huge stalactites hanging from the roof. It was dark. And then at the end of the tunnel, the light suddenly appeared. It was absolutely incredible. But I've got to say, I was somewhat relieved to see my team at the end. This is obviously a high consequence environment to swim in. The water was just above 0 degrees. And the risk is that this river can suddenly rush down a moulon, which are these large holes which drop hundreds of metres to the ground rock below and then flow out to the sea. It took me 33 years of training to swim those 8 minutes and a team of incredible French mountaineers to get me safely in the tunnel and out of it again. But I'm utterly determined to show the world what is happening here in East Antarctica and to protect this last wilderness area. This place is the front line of climate change and of rising sea levels. We now need to take urgent action.
Lewis Pugh. And that's all from us for now, but there's going to be an updated version of the Global News podcast later. If you want to comment on this podcast or the topics covered in it, you can send us an email. The address is, as usual, globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. I'm Nick Miles. Until next time, goodbye.
Capital One has a fresh take on banking. Now you can open a new savings account in about 5 minutes and earn 5 times the national average. Banking with Capital One means 5 times the savings toward your dream honeymoon, or 5 times the savings toward your family's ultimate vacation, even 5 times the savings toward just feeling good about saving. It's time to make your savings goals come true. This is Banking Reimagined. What's in your wallet? Capital One, N.A. member FDIC.